Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Marty Brenneman, when you're calling a game, like, you know, when you know that Pete's 41-92 is coming, do you prepare for it differently than the thousands of games you had done in your career?
No, I really didn't. You know, that was one of those records that we knew was going to be broken. You know, a lot of times, you know, for instance, this is a poor example, but you may go into a ballpark and not expect to see a guy hit four or five home runs in one game. You don't expect that. But we knew that Pete's record was going to fall. It was just a matter of when and who it was against and where it took place. I really didn't give a lot of thought. The only thing I was sure of was that I had enough material dealing with other players that had great careers. But in terms of what I was going to say when Pete got the hit, I never planned that. The interesting thing about that, however, was the club was in Chicago over the previous weekend to play the Cubs. And Pete was a hit away from tying the record. And it was a Sunday afternoon game. There was rain. There was a question of whether or not the game was going to be played. And in the 31 years that Joe Nuxhall and I worked together, the only time that we were ever selfish, we had an incredible relationship that got better and better and better as the years went by. But both of us were selfish enough to say, I want the hit. And we made no bones about that. And we had been together long enough so that we could throw that out there toward each other and everybody, both of us would understand. And on the Sunday afternoon, he had already tied the record. He'd already tied the record going into the Sunday game. And the first two times up, I had one of them. Joe had one. He went out. And then in the seventh inning, Nuxhall was calling the play-by-play, and Pete hit a rocket to shortstop deep into the hole. And Sean Dunson was playing shortstop for the Cubs. And I think fate entered into this because it was not a shortstop in the National League and maybe not in all of baseball that had a better arm than Dunston did. Mm-hmm. In terms of accuracy and in time, in terms of the kind of heat that he could put on a throw when he had to. And he went into the hole, I think a step or two on the outfield grass, and backhanded the ball and made a perfect throw. He got Pete by a half a step. That would have been the record breaker right there. And Joe had the shot. And I used to tell him later on, I said, hey, you had the shot, pal. I said, I can't help what Dunston did. And then, of course, we came back home on Monday night. And in front of a big crowd at Riverfront, he went hitless. And then on Tuesday night against Eric Schau and the Padres, he got a single his first time up to break the record.
He levels the bat a couple of times. Schau kicks and he fires. Rose swings.
There it is. Get out. Get out. Get out. All right.
Hit number 41-92. A line drive single into left center field. A clean base hit. And it is pandemonium here at Riverfront.
it was extremely exciting. It could not have happened to a guy who devoted so much of his heart and soul into playing Major League Baseball. He never left anything in the clubhouse when he went on the field to play. And that was day after day, game after game. So for him to get the record, and when you think back on what might be records that will go unbreakable, that certainly has to be one, because I think you have to consider the time and the era in which we are in as mm-hmm. far as baseball. You're not going to have guys that play that long anymore because there's too much money involved. And so I don't think that record will ever fall. I may be wrong, but I really don't think so.
When you're watching Griffey, and obviously Griffey was a legend as a kid, you probably knew about Ken Jr. when he was in high school. Was it Moeller High? Is that where Griffey was?
Yeah.
Because obviously his dad was a Big Red Machine member and then would come back around to be in Cincinnati again at the end of his career. Did Griffey have that look and feel of somebody who could be like Mantle from a young age?
Funny thing about that is, Matt, I came across Junior when he was about this high. I mean, I'll never forget. Sparky had a rule when he managed a club that the kids could come into the clubhouse after the game if the club won. If the club did not win, then they were not allowed into the clubhouse. But oftentimes they'd be in the clubhouse before the game, and you'd have Junior, you'd have Eduardo and Victor Perez, you'd have Pete Junior, and all of them were running around. And I used to come across Junior, and I'd swat at him, and I'd say, "Get out of here! Go find your mom and settle down and watch a game. You're getting in the way of your dad's trying to get dressed, and here you are running around like a chicken with your head cut off." And so then they reached a period in his youth where he disappeared for a number of years. We rarely ever saw him. And I'll never forget the first time I saw him after probably 2 or 3 years. He showed up one day with his dad, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how big he was. I couldn't believe how ripped and sculptured he was. And we oftentimes talked about that after he came back via the trade from Seattle. But in high school at Moeller High, he had then what a lot of people said was an absolutely perfect swing. And that was God-given. As much of an impact as Senior played on him, and Senior's been a dear friend of mine forever, I really believe that God gave this young man the gift when he came out of the womb that he was going to have a absolutely perfect baseball swing. And, the only regret that I have for him, I don't know whether he views it that way, but he was hurt so much after he came from Seattle to Cincinnati. He missed so much time. The years in which he was healthy was dominating. I mean, it was fun to watch him play. His ability to go get the ball in the outfield, his ability to swing the bat.
But Marty, even with all those injuries, you still saw and called number 400, number 500, and number 600. Any one of those stick out to you as a moment?
Well, let me tell you an interesting story about number 500. He, I guess he was sitting at 498. And one day he called me over in the clubhouse. He said, "You and I have to talk." I said, "Okay." He said, "You know it's going to happen." I said, "Yes. I want you to call it."
Man.
And he said, "You've known me since I was small." He said, "It's important for me that you call number 500. And I said, "Well, I'd be thrilled to, as long as it doesn't come in the third, fourth, or seventh inning." And he's like any ball player, "You don't know what the hell I'm talking about." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I don't do those innings. I was working at the time with a guy named Steve Stewart, who's now is in Kansas City. And I said, Steve has the third, fourth, and seventh." He said, I don't care about that." He said, "That's immaterial to me. I want you to call it." I said, "No, you don't understand." I said, "We all have an ego in this business. My ego is not big enough that I'm going to take it away from somebody who has rightful ownership to the third, fourth, and seventh inning." He said, you don't understand. I am demanding. I said, you can't demand a damn thing from me. So it got to the point where we had to have a sit down with Phil Castellini, who was the COO of the club. And I explained to Phil, I said, Phil, look, I'm not doing this. I said, it's not fair to the people I work with. Would I like to have a call in his home run? Yes. I said, but I don't have that big of, the only way we rectify the problem was that the club put out an official news release saying that Junior had made this request and that I would do each time he came to the plate, that particular at bat. And they made it. I said, you got to make it perfectly clear that this was not my idea. I'm not going to blow somebody away that I got to work with every day. If I felt like if it came in Steve's inning, then Steve had the right to call it. And so it worked out. Number 500 did not come in the third, fourth, or seventh. And it came in St. Louis on Father's Day. And his dad was there and his mom was there and his whole family was there.
The pitch. And a high drive. Hit back into deep right field. Junior has just knocked the door down to the 500 club. A high drive into the lower deck and right. Number 30 touches the ball. The dugout empties as he rounds third, getting the glad hand from Mark Berry. Greeted at home plate by Adam Dunn. Now Jason LaRue, followed by Sean Casey. And each of them will get a piece of Ken Griffey Jr. before he gets back into the dugout, hitting his 500th home run to right field.
You know, a few years go by, and now he's sitting at 598. And I go to the club, and I'm waiting. I'm not saying a word. And I walk through the clubhouse one day, and he called me over, and he said, guess what? I said, we're not going through this crap again, are we? He said, yeah. He said, I got to have you call number 600. And fortunately, we did the same basic thing. But he hit it down in Miami, and I think there were maybe 13 people in the ballpark when he hit it. But number 500 was really an interesting situation.